You're listening to Nowhere to Run with Chris White on the Revelations Radio Network. Hey, what's going on? Thank you for tuning in to Nowhere to Run. My name is Chris. You can go to the website, which is nowheretorunradio.com. And you can click the contact button there for your questions, comments, and concerns. You can email me there. You can also comment on the website itself, on the different articles and podcasts that are posted there. You can comment if you log in. We've got a lot to do today, so I'm just going to jump right in. First, well, I'll explain what I'm going to do a little later first, which is I'm going to play a clip from a testimony that was, we were going to do an interview, but it ended up being a testimony. I'm glad that we did it that way because it's a lot clearer and more concise and stuff. And he is a former medium. He's a really good friend. He's in England, and this is a really spectacular testimony. And we're going to make a video out of that in the near future. So stay tuned for that. It's about an hour long. A lot of big announcements. The Revelations Radio Network is back online, and I'm really excited about that. If you subscribe to the Revelations Radio Network, either on iTunes or some other player or whatever, however you subscribe to it, you will actually need to resubscribe to it. I wasn't able to use the old feed, so I had to create an all new feed. So if you want to continue to have Revelations Radio Network stuff updated, you're going to have to subscribe to the new feed. And you can do that really easily. Just go to the Revelations Radio Network site, and currently at the top right, you'll see the links to the new feed. And I think even on iTunes at the moment, there are two Revelations Radio Network feeds. So you'll just have to check to see which one is being updated, because they're pretty much identical looking and everything. So you're just going to have to see which one is the one that has the recent shows and then subscribe to that if that's the way that you want to do it. And that's a really good way to keep up with a lot of the different shows I'm doing if you're interested. Nowhere to Run's on there, The Full Armor of God, the First by Verse Bible Teaching, and Scripture Memory Podcast, and all four of those are on that. So it's a good way to make sure that you don't miss any shows if they come out. In fact, I thought there was a video feed. It's a long story. I'm going to work on a video thing too there later. But the Revelations Radio Network is now a project that I'm doing. I'm the webmaster for that, and I guess the basically have taken over the administrative duties and everything else for the Revelations Radio Network. So it's so I've decided to basically keep everything the same. I've changed the look of the website, some basic stuff. I plan on doing quite a bit more. Right now it's just got all the functional things on there. I plan on setting aside huge blocks of time here in the next week or so before I go on my honeymoon and then and get married and try to have it pretty well updated. One of the things that I wanted to do was to set up the Revelations Blog Network. And this is like the Revelations Radio Network in that there are a lot of like-minded people that are blogging and they're podcasting in that case. And it's a place where you can go to and find them all in one place. So right now you can go on there and there's a limited number of posters on the Revelations Blog Network. And you can see it on the right sidebar as a little widget on the page. But you can also click on the blog section and see that feed. And so I hope to really make that a big deal, because I think it would be a great thing to do with news, and a great way to get news or what's going on in the world. I also think that with the absence of the Frank and Chris show, that I might start doing, this is sort of tentative, start doing a daily news program that might not be very long, but it might be daily, and maybe 15, 20, 30 minute show or something like that, where I would just read the news every day. And in order to do that, if that is going to become a reality, I will need to have a lot of news input from users like you. If you're a news hound, you're always checking out what's going on in the news, then maybe you can help by posting news for that show. Because as long as there's a news section on the Revelations Radio Network where you're just posting links to news stories that you find interesting, So if you want to be a part of that, send me an email. Also, if you want to be a part of the Revelations blog network, send me an email and we'll check out your blog and everything. The next few things that I'll talk about before we play this clip are the Catholic Testimonies track. That's something that hopefully will be out by the end of the week is what I'm shooting for. It's been a pretty long task, so thanks for bearing with me. There have been many, many different testimonies that I've been editing down, and I keep finding more, so it's been taking a while, but it should be out very, very shortly. Also, there is a video about Seventh-day Adventism as well as sleep paralysis that'll be new on the YouTube site probably pretty soon. I don't know exactly when. Those are being done by my good friend Ivan in Canada, who has been just such a blessing to me, that have been working together on a lot of these projects, and he's just been doing amazing work. So that's just been an amazing blessing for me. So anyway, that should be out fairly shortly. And other than that, I think that I will play this clip. But before I do, I'm going to mention two other things. I always say that, but there's two other things I wanted to mention. First, my mom has all these dreams. Well, she doesn't have a lot. In fact, there's probably only like five that I really can, maybe three or four really, that I can count that she's had that are really seem to be, you know, special, you know, that she obviously thinks that they're incredibly special. She, you know, tells me about them, called me on the phone today with one of them. And they've been fairly rare. One of them, or two of them, was when I was young. One before I was born, when she was pregnant with me, and then one when I was younger, maybe four or five or six or something like that. She had one. They were both basically the exact same dream about how I would be a preacher, but not in a pulpit. That was the weird thing to her. It was like he was a preacher, but he wasn't in a pulpit. And so she kind of held that in her heart the whole time I was, you know, out when I was growing up and being rebellious and doing all the things that rebellious people do. Because she had this dream, figured that, you know, well, I had the dream. He's going to be a preacher, but not in a pulpit. I just don't know how it worked out. So it apparently did. It kind of hit me not too long ago. I was like, wait, you know, that really did sort of work out. But anyway, she's had a few other pretty significant dreams, one of which was I'll just say the one that she had today, was that she was in this like muddy sea or lake or pool or whatever it was, and it was me and her and my grandpa. And so there was this I guess she described it as monsters sort of thing, but they would only like manifest in that they would come up to the top and it would only be like a little ball or something. It wasn't quite, you know, above the, but it was above the water. And she was saying that the only way to get rid of it was to start praying and reading the Bible. And if you, as soon as you saw it, if you would pray and read the Bible, it would kind of dissipate and, you know, but it would continually happen. But that's how you got rid of it. And she knew that if you didn't pray and read the Bible, it would grow up and you know, become fully formed and like overtake you and you know, kill you or whatever. And she said the main thing that was happening was that me and her were trying to tell everybody this, that all we had to do was to pray and to read the Bible to get rid of these things so they wouldn't be, you know, fully formed. And it was like becoming more and more urgent and being extremely frustrated that people weren't listening to all that we had to do was to pray and to read the Bible. And it became a very interesting situation where my grandfather wasn't listening to this, and he got, you know, overtaken by one of these things, and there came a message that, you know, he had a choice, but yet he was overtaken by it. And she said when she woke up from it was an extremely strong impression that she should pray and read the Bible more, and she does to a certain extent, but not really a whole lot or anything, but like a lot of us. So anyway, the reason I wanted to say that is that I've also felt very strongly about this recently. One of the things that I pray about is to have a thirst for the Word. You know, recognizing that I didn't really have a thirst for the Word, but knew that it was something that I should do. And I recognized and I saw all these places in the Bible that said, hey, read me and and this stuff's going to happen. You know, you're going to be protected from this. You're going to be all this, these promises that the Bible makes of itself. Read the word and X, you know, will happen. Good stuff. So I knew all this stuff. So praying for that, and recently realized that I had been given, at least in some measure, this desire for the word that I had been praying for. And one of these Catholic testimonies really was talking about this person actually learned to read after they got saved, because they, you know, wanted to read the Bible, and somebody gave them an audio tape of the Bible, you know, books on audio or Bible on audio tape, as well as a Bible. And that's how he learned to read. He said he listened to the Bible two times through before the first time, and then, you know, began to learn how to read and read it the next time. He said he read the Bible 20 times front to back, you know, so far. And I was thinking, I don't think I've ever really done that. You know, I've read a lot of the Bible, and I probably could, you know, say that I knew almost all the stuff in there, but really, I don't think I've ever gone front to back in it. And so I decided to download in this one MP3 player I have just nothing but the Bible. And there's a great link that I'm going to actually, as soon as I get done with this, I'm going to put on the Revelations Radio Network somewhere, a place where you can download the Bible. And anyway, I would highly recommend it. It's only been 3 or something days, and I'm already in the book of Numbers. And I think that it's something that, you know, it can be done. I would recommend, honestly, I would recommend going to the New Testament for somebody that has never even read the New Testament once, or maybe he's not even read. I mean, I could say before I did this, I probably read every book in the New Testament, or at least, you know, at least once, you know, read every book in the New Testament. So if you've never done that, I highly recommend that you start with just the New Testament. Do Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Ephesians, Romans, you know, James, all those, you know, just do those, or pick one. I used to just pick like one book in the Bible and have it repeat over and over. So, but I think that if you're kind of further along in your understanding, a lot of the stuff in the Old Testament now begins to make sense. I see so much stuff now in the Old Testament that I didn't understand before, because I have, you know, a really good grasp, or at least a pretty good grasp, of the New Testament. So I really recommend that for somebody. But if you're further along in the Lord and you're thinking the same thing, I would recommend it. Just start at Genesis and go on through. How many times could you get through? Probably quite a lot. There's literally no better use of your time as far as listening time. Okay, moving on to this audio testimony from Gaz Parker. He is a native of England. His blog is linked in the Revelations blog network. It's newagedeception.wordpress.com. And this is his testimony of being a former medium in his life, of thinking that he was talking with spirits, and then finding out the true nature of their identity, and finding out that Jesus Christ was in fact who he said he was. And it's a really great testimony, and so I'm just going to play it here in just a moment. If you want to contact him, you can do so through his blog, newagedeception.wordpress.com. And as I said, we're going to make a video of this hopefully very soon, where it can be used in terms of evangelism for other mediums and people involved with the spiritualist church and things like that. So give it a listen. It's about an hour long. It's extremely good information. Here it is, Gaz Parker, Voices in the Dark.
Well, I must have been about 5 years old. No one tells you about these things. I mean, all children have nightmares, of course. Being awake and witnessing, well, people on your landing, there's something wrong there. Let me explain. When I was 5, I mean, I had 2 brothers. One was my elder brother, and I slept in the same room as my younger brother. So when I was about 5, he must have been about 3. And he slept like a baby. But the problem with me was I'd go to sleep, come 12 o'clock, middle of the night, pitch black, and I'm hearing voices. Now, I can look back now and say, well, these voices weren't audible like what you're hearing right now from me. These were voices in my head, and but they were very real, and they were kind of muffled and kind of just goading me, I think. It's very difficult to remember exactly what they were saying. But I was 5 years old, and I was in intense fear. I was very, very frightened. In fact, that frightened that I sweated that much. My bed was absolutely saturated. It was absolutely soaked. And I would just lie there in absolute fear, completely petrified, for hours on end, whilst in my mind I could see them, these people on the landing. One of the women wore like a fox fur scarf, and there were two men and they wore suits. Now, I couldn't physically see the landing from where I was, but in my mind I could see it. What I used to do, I used to get so frightened, I'd just be sweating and just, I couldn't move, I was paralysed. But what would happen is, eventually I'd get my courage together, and then close my eyes and just run around, out of my bedroom, around the landing and into my mum and dad's bedroom. Now, my mother and father were a normal working class, well, we were a normal class working family. They were a good mother and father. But, you know, naturally they believed that I was just having nightmares, or what they used to say, to coin a phrase, an overactive imagination. You know, I was a child, I didn't know any better. And after that, I started to then kind of close down from these entities, because I would start to believe that they didn't exist, so I'd ignore them. But I would imagine it was probably for a couple of years at least that they were feeding off, these entities were feeding off of my fear. And let me tell you, these things were very, very real. Anyway, I closed them down just by kind of ignoring them. And my mum taught me ways to think in a positive way, which really helped, just to think of nice things. As a 5 or 6 year old at that point, in fact, I'm probably going on to about 7, the entities stopped visiting me. So I grew up, I got to round about 14 years old. Now, this was quite an interesting time in my life, because in my house we had only one book, which was a cult, and it was a book explaining about evil, about the devil, about the different traditions like Wiccan and just stuff along those lines. And I wasn't really bothered about reading about these things. I just liked the little symbols that were in there, the pentagram, and some other strange symbols from Kabbalah and ancient books. And I would often draw these little symbols and stick them on a piece of paper and hang them on my wall. I really hadn't got a clue what I was actually doing, but I had this fascination with the occult. More so because I thought it was that kind of interesting that I started playing around with the Ouija board. And the first time I did it, we got a box game called Scrabble, and just got the letters and put them all around the table in alphabetical order, yes and no in the middle. And we used to, in the summer holidays, we used to play with the Ouija board, and one of us would always throw the glass off the table or do something ridiculous like that to frighten everyone. One time we were using it, the glass actually got hot, and it frightened us, and we stopped using it. But it was quite odd, because I always felt that after that there was this kind of presence around me, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. But I was a bit paranoid, because I used to feel that I was being watched all the time. Consequently, I used to do a lot of doodling, and I was always drawing eyes, always drawing pictures of eyes. I wonder if perhaps subconsciously I was still worrying about this presence. When I was 15, a classmate of mine was brutally murdered. It sent a lot of sadness and fear throughout all my school friends. It was very, very sad. It was just completely out of the blue. I don't really want to go into any amazing detail or name names on this. The significant point about this was that it made me question my own mortality, and I was kind of very, very frightened about dying. You know, 15-year-old lad. On my housing estate, there were these two men that used to walk around, and they were evangelists, Christians. They used to come along and speak to the children on the estate and get them to come along to coffee evenings We got a cup of coffee and a biscuit, and we'd go along because of free coffee. Obviously, they had their agenda, but we went along, and I got friendly with the two guys, and me and a couple of other friends ended up going to a church service, and we were quite, well, typical children. We felt embarrassed, and there was a lot of nervous laughter, and we kind of thought it was a bit funny that we were singing hymns. Consequently, because I came from quite an atheist family, although my mother was brought up a Catholic, my father was an atheist, and we were always told, you know, don't worry about religion. If you want to choose a religion, that's fine, but we're not going to put any pressure on you. And that kind of suited me, but to actually go into a church at that point and start singing was kind of alien to me. Anyway, my friend stopped going to the coffee evenings, but I carried on, and I ended up being saved at 16 and being a regular member of that church, and I was a born again Christian in an evangelical church. Now, that was okay. I was saved, it was great, everything was brilliant. But what I found was, I was 16 years old, I wanted to go out, have a bit of fun, I wanted to do all the things my friends were doing. They were drinking, they were smoking, they were meeting girls, going to clubs and pubs, and this is what I wanted. But what I also found was, there was this hunger in me, this thirst to find a spiritual meaning, and I felt that in Christianity, that I just couldn't find it. I couldn't find what I was looking for. So I said to God, I said, look, I'm not sure about this. I know you're real, but I'm not sure about Christianity. So I'm going to go around and have a look, and I'm going to try and find something else. So what I'm saying is, I hadn't given up God, but I'd given up Christianity. And I then went in, I was on a route to try and find the truth, as far as I could see it, because I felt disillusioned about the Christian church. I also felt quite pressured by a lot of the evangelical people. Bless them, you know, this is their way. They're just trying to save me. But I just found that a little bit overpowering as a 16-year-old boy. These grown men telling me, I've got to be doing this, I've got to do this, I've got to be at certain places. It wasn't working for me. But I'm not blaming them. It just wasn't working for me then. I don't think it was the right time for me. And also, I felt that it was odd, because I had this notion in my head that certain people, like my friend who was murdered and other people that I knew had died, were still around me. I just had this feeling. I wasn't quite sure why. Anyway, so when I got to around about 17, 18, I would go to pubs and clubs and get drunk. It was quite odd, because I could walk up to a girl and I could tell her name. This is one of the things I could do. Another thing I could do is guess people's ages. I would kind of just stand there quite inebriated on the alcohol, and just the information would just come to me. And I thought that was quite a good talent. And I thought, well, this has got to be some kind of like psychology. So I started reading up about psychology. Thought that was a bit crazy. When I got to about 20, 21, I started really getting interested in hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic programming. And I thought that this was really, really good, because I'd been suffering from a lot of anxiety most of my life. And I think a lot of that stemmed from nights when I was a child. You know, I was actually scared of the dark up until about the age of 9. So that kind of had a massive impact on me. But I had a lot of anxiety. I always felt a bit paranoid. I always felt that people around me, and I don't mean that in a psychotic sense where you've got a paranoid schizophrenic. I was quite, and if I can say, I was quite normal as a child. I understood the difference between reality and non-reality. I was getting to a point where my mind was quite open to different concepts and challenges, and I knew that I could change myself. I knew about self-help. In fact, I was quite a fan of the self-help books. So I learned about hypnotherapy. In fact, at the age of 30, I got a diploma in hypnotherapy. I learnt it for a while. and that actually led into a lot of trance work. But just going back to the age of 20, it was quite odd because there was this taxi driver, and he used to always pick me up after I go to a nightclub, and he would drive me to my house, and he would sit with me for hours, and I'd tell him things about his relationship, and I'd tell him what he has to do. I'd give him advice. Now I'm just a drunk 20-year-old kid talking to a bloke in his 40s, giving him advice. And I used to think that was quite odd. And I didn't really remember a lot of the things I said. It was when I was about 34. A lot of this, what had happened in my past, then started kicking into place. I'd been listening to a lot of conspiracy radio. A guy called Alex Jones. And other people. I'd kind of touched on David Icke's work. But I thought he was insane. At the time, at least. So I was kind of looking at the New World Order. Basically that is to do with a massive conspiracy where there are just a few people who behind the scenes are running the world. Look, I'm not here to debate that, but that's what I was listening to at the time. And I was always interested in things that were kind of secret and hidden. So at the age of 34, my wife's grandmother had just died. We were all feeling a bit sad about what had actually happened. So I'd been working away from home. I went out with a friend of mine who had, funny enough, he was quite coincidental, I was actually working with him. I do a lot of contracting, so I can go in different parts of England, and I happened to be back in my own town, and we went out for a drink. On the way back home, I said to him, look, let's just call him Jim for now, yeah? I said, Jim, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. Remember Chris? Remember he died on the motorcycle accident? Well, you know, it's really odd because I keep seeing him in my mind. I said, I've had this before. I just keep getting his picture, though, like a picture of his face, and it just won't go. But it's not like I'm actually choosing to think of him. The actual image of his face is being forced into my mind. Now, Jim had been best mates with Chris, and indeed Chris did die on a motorcycle accident. He was a guy who was a hellraiser, he loved going out, he was just a real good laugh, but a real big guy, not just in size but in personality. I didn't really know him that well, but I knew of him, I'd seen him a few times. But Jim turned around to me, he says, well, actually Gareth, that's a bit odd because I've been getting these dreams lately where I'm actually touching him. I can literally touch the guy and I can talk to him. It's like he's really, really there. And then I'm waking up. Now, we're actually in the street. It's around about November time. It's freezing cold. There's no rain or anything. It's just a bit of ice everywhere. And it's absolutely freezing. But we're talking. And it's quite interesting. So what I said was, I says, look, I'm going to see if I can find out any other information here. I know it sounds really crazy, but it just feels quite natural as well. So I just want to work with this. I said, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. So Jim said, okay, we'll see where it goes. So I then sent a question to this image in my mind, which was Chris. And I asked him to show me some more details. So what he did, he showed me the bike, he showed me what he was wearing at the time. And I explained that back to Jim. He said, yeah, that's true. He was wearing this stuff at the time. And then I said, well, he's got a message for you. And it was really odd because I was getting pictures. But I could hear his voice, but it wasn't in an audio sense. It was almost like the way the entity spoke to me when I was 5 years old. And I said, well, he said that you should not hold on to him anymore and you need to move forward. He's not around anymore and he needs you to, you know, just get on with your life. And I had my head down at the time and I lifted my head up and I knew that Jim was crying. Although I couldn't hear him, I knew, even not by looking at him, I knew he was crying. And I looked up and, of course, Jim was in tears. So I apologised and said, look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to give you any pain. But I says, that just felt like he was really talking to me. And it must have made an impact on Jim. And then, to my astonishment, I got a picture of a woman in my head, an old lady. And I could almost kind of walk like her as well. I kind of adjusted my body so it was like this old lady. And I was walking around, and it was seemed really weird. I mean, it's absolutely crazy at the time. And I gave the name of this woman and the date she died. And I said, yeah, she used to walk like this, and she was this tall. And I put my hand out, and I showed how tall she was. And he goes, yeah, that was my grandmother. And then I did the same for the grandfather, who also had passed over. Names and dates. So I just thought, this was amazing, but really, really scary at the time. So Jim went, he went home, and I went home, and it was Saturday the next day. And I was staying at my parents' house, and my wife turned up in the morning. And I told her about what had actually happened. Leading up to this, which I forgot to mention, was quite extraordinary. On the Saturday, this was a week before the mediumship stuff kicked in. And for some reason, I felt that I needed to go and see a medium. I don't know why. I just felt that I had to go and see one. My wife's grandmother died, and it was almost like I had to get a message for her, but I couldn't work it out. But I got a feeling of excitement. So I went down to the spiritualist church in the town that I used to live, and it was locked. So I saw the phone number on the side and rang up, and I spoke to this very kind gentleman, and I said, look, I need to speak to a medium. I don't know why, I just feel that I need to. So he says, look, we don't normally do this, but I'm going to give you the name of Aileen. And Aileen will be able to speak to you, but I don't know if she'll give you a reading. So anyway, I rang up Aileen, and I said, hello there. I said, look, I'm sorry to disturb you, but I hear you're a medium. I need to speak to one. I don't know why, but I just feel that I've got to speak to one. And I wonder if I can come along and see you. And she actually said that she don't normally do readings on the fly, but I'm quite welcome to come along. So I asked her how much it was going to be. She says she doesn't charge, but you can give a donation to the spiritualist church. So I said, that's fine. I went along, I went to see her, opened the door. She was a little lady, little old lady, very, very sweet. Sat down. I found it a little bit strange because the first thing she did, she got some runic stones out. Now these are stones with little symbols on them, and she said, look, I just feel that I've got to use these stones with you, but I don't know why. So she put these stones out on the table, and she told me things about my future and how I am in my state of mind. It didn't make a huge amount of sense, but it kind of gave me it made me feel a lot more relaxed, because I didn't know what was going to happen. Anyway, so after that, she said, have a sit down. So I sat down. And then she sat on the chair, and then she closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and she went to like a trance. And I'll tell you what, it seemed a little bit strange to me. The first time I'd ever seen it, it didn't feel natural. It felt a bit strange. And then the next minute, she's then describing stuff to me, saying, oh, I've got a woman here, blah, 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 blah. Now, I'm very receptive, and I'm willing to listen to her, but I wasn't giving her any information, because I thought, yeah, she might be a charlatan, I don't know. It was quite amazing because she described my grandmother. Now, she didn't give a name at first, but she described my grandmother. And then she went on to this other woman, and she gave the initial. And the initial was a M. It was an M. And I thought, I don't know who that is. And she started describing this woman. I just couldn't figure it out. And then I went, it's Maureen. And of course, that was my wife's grandmother. And it all slotted in. And she gave me this message. This Maureen gave me the message. And then my grandmother came through, and she was telling me how much she loved me. And I could feel energy around my face and my neck when this was happening. And I said, I can feel this. I can feel this to Aileen. Aileen gave me my grandfather as well, described him, talked about different quirks and stuff, gave a lot of evidence, didn't ask a lot of questions, which is very, very good. My uncle came through, and there was a couple of others. By the end of it, I was just exhausted. I was trying not to cry, but it was such a relief knowing that my friends and family were were alive and well, and they were looking out for me. What was quite astonishing was Aileen then turned round to me and says, "These things that I can do, you can do too." I said, "How do you know?" She said, "My guide told me." She said, "The life of a medium, very, very lonely. It's one of commitment, and it's the spiritual path. And if you choose that, it will be a difficult path." Now, a week later, that's when all that other mediumship stuff started coming in. So that's when I was with Jim, and my actual mediumship started kicking in then. And I actually called that a spiritual awakening. I might not call that a spiritual awakening now, but at the time, that's what I felt it was. So on the Saturday, this was a week after I'd seen Aileen, my wife came down to meet me. I told her about what happened, but I was kind of very, very wound up, and I wasn't dealing with it very, very well. I felt overwhelmed, very, very anxious, and I was shouting and having a bit of a barney with my good wife, and it wasn't good. Very, very exhausted and confused. So she said, for heaven's sake, ring up Aileen and just ask her what to do. I rang her up and she told me how to close down. And this is actually taught to mediums. And they say, look, you're just like a radio, you're a receptor. But you've got to learn to switch off from the entities that want to come through. They always want to communicate to you. So I had to pretend in my mind that I had a cloak on. And I put the hood of the cloak over me, and that was meant to be like a signal to tell the entities to not talk to me, and it worked. She said that she didn't have time to speak to me because she had to go to see a family, but she gave me a number of another medium, so I rang him up, and he asked me to come round his house. So I went round his house, and he lived in like a mobile home. And we went in. I was with my wife at the time, and he made me a cup of tea, and I looked over at the wall, and there was a picture of this man. It was like a drawing, and I thought, that's his guide. I just knew. I don't know how I knew, I just knew. And he came in. He says, "How are you feeling?" I said, "I feel really wound up." He says, "Don't worry, it's okay, we'll talk in a minute." And within 5 minutes I felt very, very calm. And just as I started feeling calm, he then called out from the kitchen. He says, "How are you feeling now?" I said, "I feel really calm." He goes, "Yep, that's my guide." And he came into the living room and he pointed at the picture of this sketch face. And he said, "He's a monk. He's from the 13th century. Look, don't quote me on the date. I can't remember, but I think it was something like the 13th century. And he was a monk, and he was kind of a high level spirit." And he said, "Yeah, this is my guide." And we talked, and he said, "Look, you're nothing special. Just because you're a medium doesn't mean you're anything special. We're more sensitive than the average person, and we're able to speak to spirits." So he then taught me some other techniques of closing down. He told me about some of the stuff he did. He did a lot of clearance work, which means going into a house and telling spirits to go away and just getting rid of spirits from houses. He did a lot of platform work as well, where he'd stand up on a platform and he would point to different people and give messages. He was a spiritualist, and he told me to join a circle so that I could learn to develop my skills. The first point of action was to ring up the spiritualist church in the town that I was living at in London. So I went on the internet and found the closest spiritualist church, and I rang them up, but they had a thing called a clothes circle, and they explained to me that if I wanted to just step in off the street, I need to go to an open circle. So anyway, just to explain what a circle is, it's when a few people sit around in a circle, the lights are dim or off, and then people go into like a semi-trance-like state and start having psychic experiences, sometimes speaking to the dead or just sending messages to each other. It's quite standard practice, really. You have an open circle that anyone can go along to, or if you really get deep into this, you can go to a closed circle where you are only able to go through invitation. These are considered more advanced, more senior mediums. So anyway, so I rang up the Spiritualist Church, and the one that I got through to that did an open circle was very accommodating and told me to come down the following day. So I did. I went down, they had a service, I sat at the back and they sung hymns. It seemed a little bit like a church, really. It was an old building. And eventually some man was announced to come onto the stage, and it seemed a bit weird because when I saw the guy come on stage, I could have sworn I saw him on the tube, but I think that might have just been down to like nerves, anxiety, I don't know. It was just some weird coincidence. The man who was the guest who did get onto the stage would later on be my guide, not a spiritual guide, but my helper to help me develop my mediumship. Whilst watching him, he was very, very good. He was pointing at people, giving names, dates, and how people died. And I was very impressed. Very, very good guy. Seemed a bit up himself, but he got the job done. But he wasn't the organiser, and he wasn't the guy that I spoke to on the phone. We'll call the guy who I spoke to on the phone Jeff. So I went over to Jeff at the end of the session, and he introduced me to the medium who was doing the mediumship that night. We'll call him Dan. I don't want to use people's real names. Jeff took me into a room behind the stage, and there was Dan as well and some other man covered in tattoos, and they sat me down and explained to me that basically I was born with mediumship abilities, whereas a lot of people, they have to develop them. So I was actually quite fortunate. But they told me about controlling it, and the circle would be good for me. But they wasn't pushy. I mean, that's the point about these places, they're not pushy at all. I told them that all I could see is yellow in front of me. Everything had a tinge of yellow, and they explained to me that this was to do with the one of the chakras, to do with energy. And they said it's the yellow chakra. I can't remember exactly whereabouts that is on the body, but they told me just to release that energy and give it away to the starving millions, people starving around the world. Just sort of just let it, you know, sort of let go of it and will it to go to starving people, which I did, and the yellow tinge kind of disappeared. I told them that I wanted to continue to develop my abilities, to be able to control them. That was the main thing I was concerned about, but also to try and find answers. I had a lot of questions about death and dying, and also I wanted to kind of find out why my life had been quite difficult with my hypersensitiveness, and if this had anything to do with it. Eventually turned out that I was going to sit in circle with Dan, but the first session I was going to sit with Jeff in his bigger circle. The next week I went to the Spiritualist Church and met up with Jeff, and there's like a kitchen just to the side of the main hall, and I was in there, and no one really speaks to you, you know, you're kind of just left on your own, which is a little bit different to say an evangelical church where everyone wants to speak to you. That was one of the first things I noticed. You kind of isolated being the new boy. But then eventually people came up to me, and I explained that I'd just recently discovered that I had mediumship skills. But the feeling I got, or the reaction I got from most people, is they were either unsure whether I was telling the truth, or in other words, they thought I was either lying, or they were uncomfortable with the idea that I could do something, which I found out later on, a lot of them have not got the ability, and they get quite envious. This is something that I was about to learn about, envy, and how rife it is in the spiritualist movement. Jeff asked us to go into the other room, which was the main hall, and we all sat down. There was chairs all round in a circle, Some of the chairs were stacked up to the side and we had to go and get our own chairs to make up the circle. He mentioned that the circle had been expanding, it had been getting a lot bigger just recently. So we all sat round. No one was really introduced, but it sounded like most people were regular because they all knew each other by name. Jeff was just naming different people. And the first thing he said, right, let's just turn the lights down. So the lights went down. And he says, right, the first thing we're going to do is I want everyone to think of a symbol. Just think of an object. Could be a square, a triangle, and just relax, go into like a deep relaxed state, and then we'll just see if we can pick up on anyone else. So what would generally happen is Jeff would kind of point at someone and say, right, you're thinking of a star right now, is that correct? And the guy go, well, actually I was thinking of a starfish, but you know, we're quite close on that. And then that's how it would go. And I don't think anyone got what I was thinking, but I remember picking out a couple of things on different people. But it was quite a limited game. And then it was quite strange because there was a woman with dark hair and she looked like a witch. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, all people who do Wicca look the same, but she looked like the kind of person who would be a witch. And I did point to her and I said, have you ever done Wicca? Or she goes, yes, I'm a witch. Right, so I've probably just got that just by looking at her. But then I got a name, and I gave her the name, and she goes, yeah, I can accept that. And I just described a grandmother. And I said, yeah, your grandmother used to be in witchcraft as well. So already I was starting to open up and start giving out messages. And Jeff was okay about that, but I just got a sense that there was other people who wanted also for me to give them a message. And I wasn't able to. I was a bit shook up because this is the first time I'd ever done it. And I was a bit nervous and I didn't feel that I was meant to be doing open mediumship in that particular session. And also, I really didn't know how this was all working. A week later, I came back to the spiritualist church and I was speaking to Dan. I said, look, Dan, can I join your session? Because I've already got an ability there and I wanted to start using it. And he was quite quick and quite reactive. He turned around and says, I will be teaching you. I'm the teacher. So there was obviously an ego issue there with the guy who was basically saying, look, you know, you're just a beginner. You don't know what all this is about. So he's almost dismissing any ability that I had then because I hadn't gone through his training. It turns out that Dan was, who was a very, very good medium, very, very good, very accurate. He wasn't born with that ability. He had learned how to do it, and his teacher was very, very much like him. It was a woman. She was very strict, and she would curse him down all the time if ever he made any assumption or took like a shortcut of some kind. So because of that, Jeff had explained that to me. Because of that, I kind of made an allowance for the guy because he was doing what he thought was best. But he did have an ego the size of an elephant. But there was a problem in Dan's circle because I always felt a sense of fear. Now, you probably heard me say this throughout this recording about not feeling good, about feeling on edge. Well, there's a theme to that because all the time that I was involved in the spiritualist church, especially when doing the circles, there was a feeling of anxiety, as if there was some kind of force against me in all that time. I probably went about 4 or 5 times to Dan's open circle, and I would often give messages and they'd be very accurate. But near the end, I started getting stuff wrong, and it was because I was just a bag of nerves, really. I could sense that Dan did not like me at all. he didn't like the idea of me showing him up with my abilities. And I knew that very, very well, and I started to feel sick. The thing about going to circles when they go wrong is they can make you physically ill. And there were times when I just felt like gagging. And it's very, very real, but it's an awful feeling. It's a feeling of oppression. I remember in the last session, it got that bad that he asked me a question and I knew what the answer was, and I just lied, just because I didn't want to wind the guy up anymore. And I don't know whether he had a hold over me of some kind, or whether it was just his negativity was affecting me. But I know when you open up as a medium, you are subject to all sorts of attack spiritually. And I think that's what was going on. Whether it was coming from Dan or not, I don't know. In fact, I don't even think it was. But I think that when you get that kind of negativity in this business, that it's a recipe for disaster. I never went back to his session, but I did, during the time I was there, meet another guy called Brian. And Brian was the leader of the other spiritualist church in the same area. And Brian just seemed like a lot more relaxed. He seemed a nicer guy. He seemed more empathic, quite emotional chap. And we agreed that after Christmas he was going to start up his circle. It was going to be a new open circle. And he'd been out of the game for a while. And he was a medium too. All these people are mediums. So after Christmas, I joined his circle. And there was three of us there. And I remember, every week I'd go, there'd be an extra person. But it never went beyond 10 people. But when I first went, I did pick up some feeling of envy off the other girl. It was good, she was okay. But that was only in the first week. And then after that, it got a bit better. But the thing was, I was able to see things, hear things, feel things, know things. I had a lot of the extra senses that most people only had one of them. So I was able to describe someone's house. For instance, one of the girls was talking to me, and then I described her grandmother, and then described the house. I described the carpet, the chairs, the smell. Although I wasn't smelling it, I can't explain it, but I can describe the smell. I described where the windows were, there was a particular crack in the wall, the cooker. I could describe, one of the things I was good at was describing people's houses. I could do that with people who had died, that is, someone's dead relative, or that actual person I'm speaking to, which is a bit freaky. And I don't know what you would call that, whether that's like a form of remote viewing or not, I don't know. But it's very, very real. And I was very, very accurate. But in Brian's sessions, it was about not necessarily just developing your mediumship ability, but getting in touch with your guides and being taught by your guides and guided to become more spiritual. Now, a guide or a spirit guide is meant to... There's I think there's about two types. One of them is your guardian angel. He's been with you, supposedly, since birth, knows everything about you. Apparently you've made some kind of agreement to come back to Earth, and he's there to protect you. He kind of stands on the door between you and the spirit world, and he'll only let certain spirits in. And he's there for your discernment. And then there's other spirit guides that come and go. You get different ones. I had quite a lot of spirit guides, but my main one, he called himself Sitting Bull. Yeah, that's right, the actual Sitting Bull, which I went and got a book on him, and I'm thinking, oh, I've got the real Sitting Bull here. But when I spoke to Brian about it, he says, well, no, he's not the original Sitting Bull, but the guides will come in and they will give you a picture and a name, sometimes a name, it's quite rare if they do, but a picture in the head of a particular person, and they will then say that this is who I am. But really, as he explained, he says the spirit world, they have no real form, so they just create a form. So it's not the genuine Sitting Bull that you're talking to, but it's the kind of the vision of this person that they're trying to convey. So I had a red Indian guy. I don't know if you're allowed to call them that now, eh? Or is it a Native American Indian as a guide? So what we learned to do was to speak to our guides. So what would happen is, if I was giving a reading to someone and I was explaining, I was describing their grandfather, and I got a couple of things wrong, I would then ask my guide, and I'd caught other mediums doing this, and I was doing this myself. I was looking up towards my right, and I could see in my mind the spirit guide. So it was almost like get my brain to think in a visual sense, and the guide would either stick his thumb up for yes or stick his thumb down for no, and I'd just get a snapshot of him. And so if I wasn't sure if I'd done something wrong, right, he'd either put his thumb up for encouragement or thumb down, and this worked all the time. And so I learned to put a lot of trust in my spirit guide, Sitting Bull. Other guys came forward, and depending on who the guide was, depending on how my mediumship would work. So sometimes it would be very, very powerful and very, very draining when it was like I had like this Norwegian guide. He said he was a Viking, and he described one of the main canals going through Norway, and he came across as a Viking with horns. And when I questioned him, I said, well, I don't think the Vikings really did have horns. He said, yeah, I know, but that's just the picture that I'm creating. So, you know, these entities can clearly make themselves, and this is the key point, these entities can make themselves look like anything. So remember that. Very, very important to understand that they can make themselves appear to you exactly how they want you to see them. So they can appear familiar, or familiar as a familiar spirit. Sometimes I'd even feel them touching me. And apparently what Brian explained to me was, when you're in the circle, one person becomes the lead medium and everyone else seems to act like a battery, but like, you know, a source of energy. But I think what it is, the spirits actually drain the energy off everyone, but they might, well, I don't know for sure, but it might be that some of the energy is directed to the main medium so that he could get most of the information through. Week after week, the energies got a lot stronger. When I say the energies, you could feel like some kind of vibration, some energy there. And it just seemed easier and easier to connect to the spirit world. And it just seemed a lot easier to be able to give readings. Some people were easier than others, but if you're talking to a medium, it was very easy to give them a reading, or them you. Nearer the end of the time I was there, I was starting to feel sick again. There was a particular girl who was quite a needy person, and like being centre of attention, and didn't like the idea of having anyone better than her. And I unfortunately was able to give more accurate readings than her. And I don't wish to sound like I think this is great, because really and truly, now looking back, I think it's quite tragic. But I didn't feel right, and the last week I was there, I told my wife that it was making me ill, and she says, well, you just got to stop going. So I did. I just cut it out. I couldn't be bothered with it anymore. And I told my guides that I was going to work on my own now, and this is how I'm going to work. And occasionally I'd go out and I'd meet people and I'd give messages, but that started to taper off after a while. Over the next few years, nothing really happened, but I was always unsure about whether I should be using my mediumship abilities or not. Start of 2009, my mother died. I got a phone call from my brother telling me that I've got to get back up, I've got to come home, back to my hometown, because there was a problem with Mum. She was at hospital. At the same time I was having this phone call, my wife was telling me that the kettle had broken, and in fact it was just boiling, it was going mad. There was like just steam everywhere and she couldn't turn it off. The electrics were going a bit crazy as well in the house. And then I got another phone call a bit later, and it was my sister-in-law telling me that my mother, and this is how she phrased it, my mother didn't make it. And I had to then just say to her, I said, "What, is Mum dead?" And she said, "Yes." And that was just a blow. It was terrible news. It's got to be the worst news for most people in their lives, hear that their own mother had died. Only we'd seen her the day before. That was the tragic thing. And she was fine, but, you know, she just dropped dead. So we drove back up towards my hometown, and got to the hospital, and yeah, she'd gone. But the piece that I had inside me, which was helping me, was knowing she was around. But because I was so emotionally upset by all of this, I couldn't really connect to the spirit world because I was so emotionally upset. I remember her buying me some electronic gadget for one Christmas, which was it was like it told the weather. It was like an LED screen, and I still had it in the box. In fact, it was a couple of months before. Or a month before, actually, at Christmas. So I opened it up, set it all up, got it working, and then about a month after that, I was in the kitchen, and the little weatherman gadget thing was in my kitchen too, and I said a little prayer out to my mum. I spoke out towards my mum, who I believe was around me at the time. I said, "Look, I know that it's early, but if you can show me a sign, I'd really appreciate it. But I know that," and I was, my heart was broken, and I was really struggling to talk. And I said, "Please show me a sign if you can. But if you can, I'll understand." And then the microwave oven pinged, and I went over to the microwave, turned my back to the little gadget, the weather gadget. Opened up the microwave, took the bowl out that I'd been heating up, turned back round, and the weatherman that had been leaning against the window was lying on its back. Now, anyone can think of a thousand different explanations for that, but you've got to understand that I was heartbroken. I was looking out for a sign from my mother, and then that happened, and any reasonable explanation will go straight out the window, okay? Because at the time I was looking for a sign, and I was desperate for that. And this actually happened. From a metaphysical perspective, yes, of course, it could be a force from a spiritual force of some kind that moved it. And that's what I believed. And that's what I still believe today. Later on, I used to think that, was that really Mum that moved that weatherman gadget? So I used to connect to my guide, but I wasn't really getting much from my guide. He wasn't really communicating with me around that time. So I started having conversations with Mum. I started opening up as I started feeling a lot better about things. And she'd come forward sometimes and I'd see her face. But it's very, very difficult trying to decipher whether the entity coming through, especially if it's someone very close to you, it's very difficult to decipher whether that entity is really who they say they are. Very, very difficult, because you've got a lot of emotional feelings involved in that. But I'd have a conversation with her and she'd say things like, I love you and blah, 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 which was very, very nice. And there was lots of other things and other things that happened during that time. But I started getting the impression that some of the things she was saying were not sincere and they're out of character. And it kept going on. And then sometimes it was just blatant lies. So I thought, right, I'm not going to speak to Spirit World anymore, because I know that's not my mum. And I've got serious doubts about all this. Because if someone can come forward and lie to me, then how the hell do I know who these things are? Where are they coming from? How do I test the source? And that was it. That's when it dawned on me. These things, there's no way I can know what they are, because even the guide, how do I know the guide's telling the truth? Seems a bit crazy to me. August 2009. I've been praying to God every day, asking him for guidance, asking him to show me the truth, and I continue to do so. I wasn't sure about Christianity, but I even prayed to Jesus and said, if you do exist or if you are real, then please help me, because I need to know what's going on. I'm confused. The questions that I asked was, am I meant to be doing mediumship? Is being a psychic a good thing? And if not, then please tell me, show me the way. Give me some guidance. So it was quite strange, because in that month I met with a guy, I call him Glenn, and we started talking about the New World Order, the Illuminati, the Maitreya, and the Big Deception. I knew there was something going on. I'd looked upon the work of David Icke. Some of that is quite credible, and other stuff is just completely off the wall. I'd looked into Blavatsky. I read into a lot of the stuff that the Truth Movement is looking into. But still the answer wasn't there. So I just continued. I continued talking to my friend, emailing him. We met up a couple of times. I think it was just after Christmas 2010, around about January, when we met up in London, and we went for a tour around the capital, just looking at the buildings. Went down to the Scientology building, had a look there. Looked at the architecture, tried to look for the Masonic statues. And then we ended up in the St. Paul's. Now all this time, my mate, who was a Christian, was trying to kept talking to me about scripture, and he'd been doing this for quite some time, for about 6 months or so. And I wasn't really taking much notice of it. I had my beliefs. I was someone who believed in spiritual things, but I had no concept of a counterfeit spirituality at that time. I just need to say that a lot of the time leading up to this point, I've been feeling quite down, quite depressed, not knowing what I'm meant to be doing as a spiritual person. So we're in St. Paul's and we're walking around. My friend's got these passes so we can get in there. Otherwise, I think you're paying about £11 a head and you get like a year pass. He had two of them. And we went in and we went looking around. It's an amazing place. And to me, it was just a cathedral. Anyway, so as we walk around to another part of the building, I'm suddenly drawn to this painting. It's a painting of Jesus. He's standing there, and underneath it's got the writing. It says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." But the way it actually worked was, Glenn sort of got me to look at the picture, the organ, the music started playing, and as I looked at it, he then read out the words, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." And at that point, I just got an overwhelming sense of emotion. I have felt that before in the past, and that was when I was saved. And this feeling was just so incredibly powerful. I had to go and sit down, and I just felt like weeping. It was just an amazing, overpowering feeling. And at that point, I knew. I had no doubts. This was the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, and I knew Jesus was real at that point. So he eventually, after all this time, and after all this asking of him, he came back, and he found me. But looking back, I know that he never left me. Now, it took a couple of months before I eventually decided to get on my knees and ask him to save me, giving my life to Christ and renouncing mediumship and all my occult ways. Spiritualism is actually a religion. In their own manual, the National Spiritualist Association says, and I quote, "A spiritualist is one who believes, as part of his or her religion, in the communication between this world and the spirit world by means of mediumship, and who endeavours to mould his or her character in conduct in accordance with the highest teachings derived from such communion." So, what they're actually saying is, this is actually a religion. I then asked the question, if it's not Christianity, then what kind of religion is it, and who are they actually praying to, or even worshipping? Why do people become spiritualists? There must be like some kind of motivation behind that. For me, I think it was because I feared death. That was kind of what spurred me on. And what kind of trapped me into that was the death of someone very, very close to me. But I think curiosity also played that part as well, like playing around with the Ouija board. They're kind of like the main three key points of perhaps why I got into spiritual contact. So if spiritualists and mediums in particular are not speaking to the dead, then who are they speaking to? Well, the Hebrew word for demon is actually familiar spirit, and that's quoted a few times in the Bible. As I explained earlier, a familiar spirit is a spirit that pretends to be a loved one or someone very, very familiar to you. But you see, no one realizes, well, when you're doing mediumship, in that case, that even Satan can appear as an angel of light. 2 Corinthians 11:13-14. And he uses this as a form of manipulation. Much of the New Age talks about a light, but what they don't realize is it's a hidden light, an occult light. It's not the same light as the pure light of God, Christ Jesus. During the years of 14 to 15, I started reading up on astral projection, which is a way of taking yourself out of your own body into a supposed astral plane. So it's a transportation of the spirit, is one way of putting it. And to enable me to do this, I was told to imagine chakras going down my body in various places, and then a light going from the top of my head all the way down to my feet, splitting in two, and then coming right back up into the top of my head and going round and round and round. I advise you not to do this. I carried on doing this for months because I was really, really wanted to experiment with astral projection. And one night I woke up and I was paralysed. It was dream paralysis. But it was worse than that, in fact, because I was being sexually attacked. It was like an overwhelming but very, very unpleasant sexual feeling in the nether regions. It was horrible. It was just overpowering. There was no joy in that. And that lasted, could have gone on for half an hour. Now, legend talks of the succubus and the incubi, or the incubus, which is a demon that rapes people. So here am I trying to experiment with spiritual things, and I'm getting attacked in gruesome ways. In fact, leading up to that actual attack, I don't know whether I was actually, my physical body was attacked or whether it was my spirit, but I remember being kind of moved around on the bed, like my legs moving, my arms moving, but I was not completely in control of that. But what I can relate to that is when I was doing my mediumship in a spiritualist church, I could physically feel spirits touching me, just like tapping me and stuff like that on the shoulder. And also, if I allowed myself to go into a deep trance, they would control my limbs as well. I would allow them to do that. You lose the ability to actually control this. The entity can come in and out once they've broken you down. So in other words, they come in very, very subtle at first. And time after time after time, they begin to sort of take over. There was times, especially when I used to drink, and I would go into a trance and talk to spirits, and I could lose like an hour, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. And I wasn't exactly out of my head, so to speak, at the time. And it's also known, it's very well noted, that if you do use drugs or alcohol, and again, I don't advise this, it can enhance mediumship and psychic ability. It just makes you wonder why that is, and I can tell you it's because your barriers are lowered down. It's extremely dangerous. There's also been scientists who've proven that there is like a spirit world. Sir William Crookes, who actually discovered thallium, he claims to have seen many materializations, actually seeing these entities, and made a record of them. And then there was the medium Catherine Golighter, who the scientist W.J. Crawford, Belfast, did a number of tests with, and actually weighed her during the time when this spirit was actually materialising, and she was actually lighter at the time of that. Ephesians 6:12 says it, and it says in there, it says, "For we're not contending against flesh and blood," that's humans basically, that's what they're saying, "but against principalities, against the powers, against the rulers of this present darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places." I think Paul kind of says it all there, really, which is saying that the spirit world just wants to gain control of our minds, because that's where the battlefield is. It's not the flesh and blood, it's the mind. And if the entity can get into your mind, which the medium is allowing that, then half the battle is won. It's just then a case of bit by bit by bit taking that control away from the medium. But they do another damage as well. There's always a secondary action there where they will work through the medium, and the medium will be able to give messages to people and convince each one of them people, that their saviour is already speaking through that medium, because that medium becomes a kind of a counterfeit saviour, although sincere, unfortunately very, very wrong as well. That what actually happens is they will represent Christ, but saying that Christ doesn't exist, that their salvation is, "Don't worry, if you die you'll just cross over, so that's okay." And that is also a deadly, deadly deception. Moving on to the present day, I'd say I'm a lot more relaxed now, a lot happier, and I don't get the anxiety like I used to. My message to anyone who is dabbling into the occult or is getting involved in tarot cards, the Ouija board, mediumship, going to see a medium, I ask you that you may not be a Christian, you may not believe in Christ, but to ask God, seek the kingdom of heaven and ask God for guidance, because if you seek him, he will come to you. So thank you for listening, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to Nowhere to Run. You can download all of the archives to this show and others I have done for free at nowheretorunradio.com. Your prayers and donations are needed and appreciated. You can partner with me to reach many more people with discipleship, apologetics, and the gospel. Go to Nowhere to Run Radio to help support this ministry. Thanks for your time.